Blog Talk Radio.
This is your moment with Misty.
It's the motherfucking movement. Wake your ass up. The revolution will be televised. The time is now. Let's talk.
Good evening. I'd like to welcome everybody and thank you for listening in. This is your moment with Misty. Tonight we're going to talk further about the topic that we started last Friday. We're going to talk and focus on our African American youth, males specifically, and steps that we can take to awaken our youth and empower them to understand not only their worth, but their purpose, and also to impact and change how they look at themselves, how they look at their purpose in this world. And we're going to start that conversation with how our youth are over-sexualized, how our youth, and specifically again our male youth, have not been taught to protect their seed. We talked last Friday about awakening in our youth the value of reproduction and the value of making life. A lot of our young men out here are having babies, having unprotected sex, and planting their seed in unfertile ground. And what I mean by unfertile ground is they are planting their seeds in young women who are not ready and or equipped to carry and birth and raise strong men in our community. One of the things that I have been asked about over and over again is why is it that when our youth are sent to prison or institutionalized for any period of time, they align themselves with Islam? Now, I want to just take a moment and clarify that I was raised Islamic or Muslim, and I practiced the Muslim faith for many, many years. I am no longer a Muslim, but I want to talk about why Islam attracts our brothers and our young men when they are incarcerated and what it gives them and what they're lacking and what we need to give them before they get incarcerated, so that they can be better equipped to face the oppressions that are out here in the world that are killing them. Before we can really get into this conversation, you have to understand that black infant mortality rate in the United States is at an all-time high. Specifically in Kalamazoo, Michigan, African-American infant mortality rates are almost that of a third world country. So when we're talking about the fact that our babies aren't even able to make it to birth or are dying once they are born, we have to understand the importance of educating our community and starting with our youth so that they understand the importance of not only protecting their seed, but being intentional about birthing their seed. Now, a lot of these young men align themselves with people in their communities that they see that are successful. So this phenomenon that we see with young men aligning themselves with, you know, dope dealers or aligning themselves up with people in the community, you have to understand what success looks like around you, when, what you have access to demonstrate success, and that then is what you are going to model. Unfortunately, a lot of our young men are raised in homes where they don't have a positive male role model. If you cannot imagine something, you cannot become that something. What do I mean? What I mean by that is it is a very difficult task for a child who is born in poverty. And again, remember, we are specifically focusing on our male youth in this segment. It is very difficult for a young man to see himself as a doctor when there are no doctors around him that he can associate with and then align himself with and then model that behavior. For you to want to be a doctor, a lawyer, a whatever, fill in the blank, you have to be able to see it. You have to be able to see yourself as that. And most of our young men aren't able to have role models, somebody tangible, real, that they can model themselves after. Yes, we are a resilient people. Yes, there are people that have made it out of the ghetto. And yes, there are people who have broken all types of stereotypes and all types of obstacles and oppressions. But those numbers are few. I'm talking about the little brown and black boys that are stuck in poverty. And they are repeating cycles over and over and over again. Their father was incarcerated. They'll be incarcerated. Their children will be incarcerated. Or their father sold drugs, they're going to sell drugs, and their children are going to sell drugs. You become what you see. You become what you can imagine. So most of these young men don't even have access to adequate education. I mean, just read the headlines. Just read the headlines and what's going on in Detroit. If I'm not mistaken, the Supreme Court just ruled that children in Detroit are not owed literacy. They do not have a right to be taught how to read. When you read that, it should have struck in your mind images when our people were enslaved and kept from literacy. Do you understand the magnitude of what that message said? That message said to us, we know reading is powerful. We know that reading opens doors for you. We know that reading dismantles generational curses, i.e. poverty, but you don't have a right to it. You're saying an American citizen does not have a right to literacy. That should upset you. Now I'm going to kind of go back to where I was at before. Our young men that are growing up become what they see and hear. What do I mean? Well, most of them are listening to trap music, which has become popular since the 90s, right? It's huge now. And because most of their peers and most of their elders in their communities, and again, I'm making a generalized statement, but I'm talking about numbers here. Yes, some make it out, but not enough are making it out. Some break the mold, but not enough are breaking the mold. Some overcome, but not enough are overcoming. Some don't get shot, but too many are getting shot. Because the music is glorifying the lifestyle. And in my mind, if that's all I can imagine myself becoming, then that's what I'm going to become. When I look around and I see that the women flock to the drug dealers and they go to the trap houses, then that's what I want to become. I want that. I want that instant fame. I want to be great. But I don't understand what being great is outside of what I'm shown. So we have our young men living these rap style lifestyles, if you will, where they are glorifying sex. And they are glorifying fast money. And they're glorifying death by bullet. Okay? They are literally glorifying shooting each other gunning each other down. Because when they look at another brown man that looks just like them or their daddy or their brother, they don't see themselves. When they've aligned themselves with a concrete block and said, I'm from the 269. Okay, well, what has Kalamazoo, Michigan ever done for Misty specifically? I'm not shouting I'm from the 269 because there's more to life than that. Because, see, I was one of the fortunate ones to be able to see outside of my circumstances, as were my brothers. So now we got these young men that are listening to this music. Their peers are being fed the same thing. So it's almost like, the only analogy I can really use right now is it's almost like cancer. It's almost like a cancer. It's spreading. And it spreads from one individual to another individual because we do not understand how important our ear gate is. We don't understand on a spiritual level how powerful music is. Now, I know I got a lot of atheists out there or whatever the case may be, and hey, do you, whatever. But I am here to tell you that on a spiritual level, music is powerful. What we allow into our ear gate permeates through our subconscious and then dictates our actions. If you think I'm lying, I'll tell you right now, you can put a song on right now that you heard during a significant period of time in your life, and it will instantaneously take you back to that moment. Bad or good. Just happened to me today. My daughter sent me a video clip from my wedding and my first dance, and the music, I listened to it, and it took me back to that day, and literally my eyes started tearing up. Don't tell me that music isn't powerful. Don't tell me that music is not impacting our youth. Because if that were the case, there wouldn't be an agenda behind music. There wouldn't be people sitting in rooms determining what message you get to rap about. If it was not powerful. Now, that's just your ear gate. And we'll talk about the ear gate regarding our young sisters at another time. But tonight, again, I want to keep reminding you that we're talking about our young men and what they're hearing and what's being reinforced. There was a time that rap music was positive. There was a time that rap music talked about our circumstances and how it was holding us down. There was a time that rap music encouraged us to step outside of our circumstances. Not the case now. I mean, save for a rapper here or a rapper there. And I'm talking about rap music right now, not to just with a broad paint stroke paint it all bad. I'm talking about looking at it as a whole. Is it beneficial or is it harmful? Well, for the most part, it's harmful. For the most part, it is detrimental to our communities. For the most part, the music, the money that is being generated by the music is not helping the community that's making the money for the industry. Now, you got the music that's telling our young men to go out here and sell drugs, you know. I mean, and in music I listen to. So I'm not setting myself aside from it. I'm saying listen with purpose. Listen to lyrics, listen to messages, because those are the messages that our youth are hearing, and those are the messages that we need to come against. When we talk about how we can strategize to uplift our young team, you got to know the message that they're listening to. You got to speak their language. You can't speak their language if you don't know what they're listening to and what's motivating them. Now, that's not to say that some youth can't listen to trap music and go on and go to college or a trade school or whatever else they can do and get out of that lifestyle. I'm talking about the ones that don't make it tonight. Now, this music is telling our youth to go out there and kill their brothers and go out there and slang, you know, dope. But the other thing that it's telling them, the other message that is being reinforced in this music is the hypersexualization of our male youth. Now, you got to understand, historically, our black men and our black women have been sexualized by Europeans. The black male body, the black male image, he is a thug, and he is violent, and he is a rapist, and he is hypersexual, and you can't trust him, and you have to watch out for him, and he's an absent father, which ties into subtly him being hypersexual. They're getting these messages. So the messages are coming from, you know, mainstream white media and white portrayal and characterization of black males, but it's also being reinforced by the music and images that they see in these videos and this music. Women are half-dressed, and you're supposed to Google them, and not Google as in the search engine, but Google them, you know, I am, and you know, you want half-clad women because when I'm successful, I have a dime piece, a trophy on my arm. And you know what? When I'm real successful, I'm surrounded by half-naked women. And the music is talking about, oh, I had this girl going down on me in the club. Oh, I had two women in the bed with me. Oh, you know, I hit up this bad girl or this bad chick, and, you know, I had sex with her on the first night. That's Drake, the one that everybody talking about how successful he is and how much money he making and this, that, and the other, and blah, blah, blah. Imagine how many people are listening to that message. What is it telling our youth? It's telling our youth that you conquer women. The more women you have sex with, the more of a man you are. So here's the irony of this whole thing, okay? We have been lied to by the oppressor to tell us that all we are good for is free labor and sex. But outside of that, we got to be feared because we're lazy and we're violent, right? And we're irresponsible parents, right? But our youth are buying that message. They have literally been brainwashed to believe it, and the music is reinforcing it. So what happens? What happens is they're over here having mad sex with just anybody, okay? Check out your HIV rates in your town. Check out your STD infection rates in your town. So these young men are just spreading their seed. Now, I want to even go back further. This hypersexualization, what is it doing? Well, I'm going to talk a little more about what sex is about on a spiritual level. And again, for my atheists out there, no harm, no foul, whatever. If it's not for you, take the meat, leave the mess. The fact of the matter is, sex, a very intimate act, allows you to communicate with your partner on a level far beyond words. There is a mingling of energy that happens when you engage in intercourse with another individual. There is a vulnerability and an opening of self when you engage in intercourse with another individual. Now, there are reasons why children shouldn't have sex because they're not emotionally ready to understand the responsibilities. But it's bigger than that. It's bigger than that. Because when you start opening your spiritual man to all of these physical encounters, you're creating all of these attachments on a spiritual level that are going to tie you down. Now, when you start mixing your seed with just anybody, when you start mixing your seed with just anybody
and planting your life force, leaving your life force in, you know, just random people, and potentially creating a life with just Sally, somebody you just hit up for the night. Now she's carrying your baby. You don't even know this girl's last name. She has your seed. You don't even know if she got good credit. You know nothing about this woman except she looked good in a club or at the trap house. And now she's carrying your baby. And now you got a baby mama, quote unquote, you despise, because you mingled your life force with this woman, who you weren't even able to ascertain whether or not she was equipped to watch a pet rock, let alone raise your child. But let me stop for a minute. That's because that young man doesn't understand the value of his seed. That's because that young man has never been taught that your semen needs to be protected at all costs. There are systems in place to catch you up. You can keep sprinkling your semen around like you the Pope, some for you and some for you and some for you and some for you, and let it land on Lucy and Shaniqua and Becky and anybody else, and now you caught up in a system that was designed to keep you down. So that's one reason. The other reason is this. You're mingling your seed, and you're not even allowing it an opportunity to fall on fertile ground because you didn't do your homework. I mean, would you leave your wallet anywhere? Would you let somebody have access to your bank account, your Social Security number, the keys to your apartment, or whatever you value? Would you just let some random chick you just met have access to that? You would look at me like, no. But you'll ejaculate in some chick you don't even know her full name. We are failing our males because we are not teaching them the importance of their seed. We are not teaching them to scrutinize sex partners. We are not teaching them that every time you lay down and leave semen behind, you are setting that child up for failure. After the 1930s, and we moved into the 1970s, and the government dismantled black families, and we'll talk about that at another time, but when our black families were dismantled and black fathers were kept out of home, because during the Great Depression, they wasn't hiring brown bodies to work. And in the 1940s, they weren't hiring black bodies to work, black men who had customarily been the heads of their household and providing for their wives and their families. So now you're moving into the 70s, okay? And all of these practices were in place. You can Google this. All of these practices were in place. And now you got the 70s, you got the end of the Vietnam War. So many poor black men were killed. They came back from the war. Heroin was introduced into our inner city. So a lot of these brothers came back with a heroin addiction, and then heroin was pumped into our ghettos by the government. Well, that's 1970s. Well, what happened at the end of 1970? Well, at the end of 1970s, now we got the AIDS epidemic. In the 90s, we got crack. So all of these young men are missing positive male figures. And the women aren't equipped to teach a man, a young boy, how to be a man. We can only teach them what we think a man should be. And I know a lot of sisters are going to get mad at this, but I don't care. The truth is what the truth is. A woman can only teach a young man what a man should be. And there are a lot of young men who have been raised in single-parent households by their mothers, and they've been successful, and they've turned out wonderful. But again, I'm not talking about the 1%, the 2%.
I'm not talking about a slice of the pie. I'm talking about the whole damn pie. I'm saying that as a community, we focus so much on female sexuality and female modesty, which, hey, I'm not saying that that's necessarily a bad thing. I'm saying we have to do it equally. There has to be equity between the genders. We have to raise our black men simultaneously while we raise our black women. No, I am not a feminist. I don't align myself with anything that says I have to elevate myself on the back of a black man. Because, see, that is divisive and it's white rhetoric. No, black women can be elevated at the same time our black brothers should be. I mean, pay attention, pay attention. We are allowed into corporate America because black white men don't see black women as a threat. So it's divisive in nature is where I'm going with that. Now, our young black men, I mean, it goes without saying, we need more black teachers, black male teachers. We need more black male representation. And all of these black athletes that's living the life, and they don't even understand that they modern day slaves, but that's another topic. Every one of them should do something for inner city youth, every single one of them. And if they aren't, shame on them. And if they have, they need to keep doing it. And if they have done a little, then they need to do more. Because until we address our problem, it's never enough. When you're making $100 million, gajillion dollars a year, yeah, and you're not helping the black community, and you're a black athlete, and if you came from the inner city, shame on you. Black entertainers, if you're not feeding back into the black community and reaching out to organizations or starting up organizations, and I'm saying you have the capacity to start up organizations that aren't these small little pockets, but that can really make a huge difference. And that's why I commend LeBron James for what he's done. And he's not the only one. He's not the only one. Okay, and I don't, you know, get into the whole LeBron over Michael Jordan or whatever, because at the end of the day, I could care less. At the end of the day, I could care less because it's unimportant. It's unimportant. When we can't teen pregnancy rates, when we can't reduce our young men going to prison, let me tell y'all something, there is nothing worse to go and sit at juvenile court and see just busloads and busloads of young black men handcuffed, shackled, walking in flip-flops and county oranges, going away. And that's just prepping them for prison life. They're not being rehabilitated. The staff don't give a doggone about them. They're not helping them. It's our responsibility. We need to teach our young men, hey, female without protection. Don't let her come near you. She's trying to set you up. A lot of women looking at me like, I can't believe you said that. Yep, she's trying to set you up. If a woman will allow you to enter her body without protection, let me tell you something. You ain't that special. You ain't the first. And you definitely won't be the last. You better wrap it up. Is that a harsh message? I don't care. Because the situation calls for us to stop tiptoeing around these subjects. When you can drive downtown Houston and see the number of black men that are homeless and battling mental illness, and they out on the street living in tents, begging. Something needs to be done. Something needs to happen immediately. It is a crisis. If it was a white crisis, white folks would be dealing with it.
You best all gonna believe something you're doing about it. Just like the fact that white folks is dying from methamphetamine and dying from heroin overdoses, now we have a crisis. But when crack was ravaging our community, all they could talk about was crack babies and crack mamas and this, that, and the other, and made us ashamed when we didn't even realize that they was the one bringing it in. How many black folks you know other than Creflo Dollar own a jet? I'm challenging everybody. I'm challenging you that if you know a black male that you're not related to, because see, these messages should already be sent to the ones you related to. Be that positive influence. Connect them to a positive male role model, somebody that's going to tell them about their worth, somebody that's going to let them know they come from greatness, that they come from men who were robbed, brought over here in 3, 4, 5 months in the belly of a ship. That they didn't come passively, that there were many that jumped overboard. They would rather drown than die and be enslaved. There were many that overran those ships. There were many that revolted on those plantations. There were many that stood up and said, "You're not going to rape my wife," and died for it. We don't come from a passive race, but we are sleeping. We are caught sleeping, and not only are we sleeping, let me tell y'all something. It's worse than being asleep, because when you're asleep, you can get nudged, and you can wake up. We are comatose. Half of us believe we've arrived, and we don't even realize that we just moved from the cotton fields to the big house. Well, newsflash, cotton fields, big house, you're still a slave. You are not free. So just because you living in a subdivision and you can pay a mortgage and y'all a little comfortable, you're not free. Because as long as black people are dying and you think you're removed, you're not an island. Their suffering impacts you. And if you don't believe me, the next time you get pulled over or racially profiled, or you can't get your soy latte, or the police get called on you for doing absolutely nothing, maybe then you'll believe me. The time is now. The urgency is now. We are dying now. We are dying. We are walking around dead men walking. If you don't believe me, check out the CPS demographics and the disproportionality of our brown babies going into quote-unquote care. Now, are some kids being abused? Yeah, that's the cycle of poverty. That's what parenting out of trauma looks like. We'll talk about that later. Our young men have to understand the importance of who they are, that when they see themselves in the mirror, they see worth. And worth isn't equated with a rap mixtape. You ain't got to be the next Drake. Drake from Canada. I mean, is Drake even black? I'm not hating on Drake. I'm hating on the fact that talent is distributed equally in this world. The Creator gives it to everybody. It's opportunity that keeps you down. It's systemic racism that keeps you down. And yet we rise. And so I'm saying right now, this is a must. This is about as important as it can possibly be. There is a sense of urgency right now, because if you can't feel it, the universe is shaking things up. Something huge is about to happen. And y'all still plugged into the matrix, eating gray slop, thinking that it's a steak or ribs or a plate of chitlins. And you don't realize that your ankle is shackled to that floor and you can't move. And that means your kids are going to be raised in poverty. We're talking about breaking those chains. And it starts with our male youth. So I'd like to open the lines up right now. If anybody wants to comment or you know, join the discussion. I welcome you. I know it's a little bit of a heavy topic tonight, but this is something that we need to start the conversation, and then we need to go and move into action. So, again, I want to take a little moment here to just kind of open the floor. Hello?
Hey, good evening, sis. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing okay. I'm doing okay. Hey, as usual, you brought the fire this evening, and we always appreciate that.
Thank you so much.
With that being said, the topic is once again on point, and it is definitely needed in this day and time. We I think, you know, as you know, being a black man who has raised black men, I feel that a lot of what you said was on point. That being said, I think that, you know, really what is lacking is the role model. And I don't think that you have to be a father figure to be a role model to young men. And I mm-hmm. think that it's lost, it's become lost on ourselves as far as being a community, or, you know, the village aspect of our community has been lost for so long. And people, we're in the me era, basically. Instead of, you know, I know you remember the days when, you know, you get in trouble in the neighborhood and you might get a butt whooping from your neighbor. And then when your parents get home, you know, you get another butt whooping. So, but these days it's like, no, don't touch my child. You know, don't this, don't this. And I'm not saying, I'm not advocating so much as, you know, beating a child as opposed to speaking to them. You know, because I think a lot of times our young people these days, and you was on point, you know, the communication part between the elders and the young people is lost. Mm-hmm. And it's almost, it's a love-hate relationship. You know, if you really, you know, take a step back and look at it, you know, because as elders, a lot of time we are not there for our young people. And I've heard that, you know, said by our young people. And, you know, a lot of times they just want someone to talk to them, to let them know the way that things should be. You know, to they want to ask questions about why are things the way that they are. You know, and a lot of times older people don't have the answers for them, and that's unfortunate. You know, so I'm about building bridges and networking and reaching out. And, you know, I've worked in youth outreach before, and we've, you know, raised young men to become respectable members of the community and taught young men to reach back. You know, once they've made it. And that's something I think also is lacking. As we can see, when you talk about some of these athletes out here that go out here and, you know, make this money and pour it right back into the system that oppresses them, you know, or they make this money, they spend the money on the women, on the bling and all that. And then at the end of their careers, they're left with nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no way in the world that, you know, you should have some of these athletes basically, you know, applying for bankruptcy or ending up in jail at the end of their careers. You know, because to me, you know, you've gone on with the plan. You've gone straight along with the plan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you lost all of your wealth. You're not going to pass it down to your children. To your 20 children that you done made on the way. So, you know, now you end up in jail, or you end up, you know, doing other heinous crimes, or you don't know how to act with your money. You know, the article that Diddy made the other day, where, you know, people, where he's saying that, you know, the resources are not there for people that are in the industry, as far as, you know, when they need money to do stuff or they need money to do this or that, they, you know, are begging for help from people and they can't get their own people to help them, or, you know, they definitely don't get any help from, you know, the white side of the tracks. So that's basically what he was saying in that article that he did. But the one thing that he left out is that he didn't put in the part where he was part of, you know, basically selling the culture. You know, he was part of that, and he left that mm-hmm. part out. But I do get his point on what he was talking about as far as, you know, we helping each other out as a community. And, you know, just to put it on a famous level where fame is concerned, the whole thing with Lee Daniels and Dame Dash, where, you know, he loaned him the money to mm-hmm. put him on. Dame Dash loaned Lee Daniels $6 million to mm-hmm. put him on. And we all see, you know, how successful Lee Daniels has become. But he has yet to pay Dame Dash back. So Dame Dash had to get street about it, and he had to approach him in the streets and say, look, I want my money back. You know, and Lee Daniels' response to him was, you know, come work for me and you can make money back. But my thing is, well, how are you going to ask a black man to work off a debt that you made, basically? Mm. You know, so I get why he's upset and he's angry. A lot of people don't get that. You know, a lot of people look at Dame Dash as being, a thug, basically. But Dame mm-hmm. Dash is actually a successful businessman. He's got his hand in movies and, you know, other projects out there. So my thing is, he's as successful as the next man. And he said, it's not the point of the $6 million. It's the what word am I looking for? It's the principle. It's mm-hmm. the principle. It's like everyone else has been paid in Lee Daniels' circle. Why is that? You know, and that goes on to another stereotype where, you know, we have our own people that don't want to deal with black-owned businesses. And, right. I mean, it's really a really vicious circle that it all comes from having role models to deal with. Now, if that was a young man that didn't know any better and that was his only, you know, role model to look up to, now he would have a bad taste in his mouth about dealing with black people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it shouldn't be that way. We, you know, a lot of times we're out here and we're not doing the things that we're supposed to be doing. And that's something that we were, you know, training a lot of the children that we dealt with. We was trying to show them, no, this is the way that you do things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my partner, he took a bunch of children just this week. You know, I talked to him earlier. And he took a bunch of children up to Bandcamp, up to Baltimore. Now, he lives in Virginia, but he got them up at 6 o'clock in the morning. These are underprivileged children that don't get out, you know, that have never really, you know, been off of their block. He took them up to Bandcamp up in Baltimore. So, you know, that's over 100 miles.
Mm.
And he took them up there in a car that wasn't working well and wasn't sure how they was going to get back, but he got them up there. And he said those kids, those young men, they complained and they bitched and moaned about getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning. He said once, you know, they got on the road and they started having conversations, he could see their attitudes changing. You know, he said by the time that they finished that band camp that day, and they got back to Virginia or whatever, and he said they was up for almost 12 hours in 100-degree weather in the heat. He said, but he said they had a good time. He said, you know, that's something that you can't, you know, that you can't pay for. He said the looks on their faces, seeing that somebody cared enough about them to get them off of their block and let them see, you know, how other people live and how, you know, just seeing a part of the country that they hadn't seen before. And, you know, I told them, you know, that's priceless to them because 10 years from now, they'll remember that experience. They'll remember that somebody reached out to them. You know, and that's one thing that, you know, as a black man, I feel like we don't do enough of. We don't reach out to the youth. Once we get a certain age, and I like the way that you went through the 60s, the 70s, you know, and the 80s and into the 90s, because all of that is true. You know, and my thing is the only thing that I feel you left out was the 80s. That's when really AIDS and crack came into the picture.
Right.
You know, which destroyed our, you know, family units even more. You know, in the 90s was really when they was locking us all up. That's when the mass incarceration started with the three strikes laws and all that kind of stuff. You know, so we have to realize that this system has always been built against us. And a lot of times we have people out here that are trying to speak instead of sitting back and listening and learning game. And you've been dropping a lot of game this evening. And I hope that, you know, the word gets out and that people are listening. You know, because it's definitely important to talk to our youth and not fear them. And I appreciate you, sister. And on that, I'm going to yield.
Is there anybody in the queue right now or no?
Yes, we have two other people in the queue. One person called. And Sister Stephanie regretted that she wasn't able to call in this evening.
Okay.
But she says she's here in spirit.
Okay. And again, you know, I'm sending her positive energy as well. Before we have the person come into from the queue, I do want to say that, yes, we need more positive role models in our community. We have gotten away from our elders, you know, being role models and holding accountability and you know, being a force in our community that kept order and almost this rites of passage, you know, helped the youth, guide the youth, model the youth so that they would understand what to expect to be able to claim a seat at the big table, to be able to claim a seat on the porch, you know, with their elders, to be able to claim a seat at the card table. We've lost that, and we've lost it for a lot of the reasons that we talked about tonight. We've lost it, but we can get it back. We can get it back. A lot of our youth right now are only 12 and 13 years younger than their parents. So that's what we're seeing a lot of this residual effect of, and it's having a negative impact on our community. So I'd like to yield and invite the next person that's in the queue.
Just press 1 if you want to join the conversation. If not, sis, can we take a short break? And they may want to join the conversation.
Okay.
We'll be back in about 3 minutes.
Okay, thank you.
So I'm driving down the street with my 4-year-old nephew. He knocking back a juice box, me a Snapple. Today, y'all, we are doing manly shit. I love watching the way his mind works. He asks a million questions. Uncle, why is the sky blue? Uncle, how do cars go? Uncle, why don't dogs talk? Uncle, uncle, uncle. He asks uncle, uncle, uncle. He asks uncle, 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 as if his voice box is a warped record. I try my best to answer every question I do. I say it's because the way the sun lights up the outer space, it's because engines make the wheels go, it's because their minds aren't quite like ours. I say yes, no, no, yes, no, yes, no, I don't know, who knows, maybe we laugh. He smiles, looks out the window, spots a cop car, drops his seat and says, oh man, uncle, 5-0, we gotta hide. I'll be honest. I'm not happy with the way we raise our black boys. Don't like the fact that he learned to hide from the cops well before he knew how to read. angrier, that his survival depends more on his ability to deal with authorities than it does his own literacy. Get up, I yell at him. In this car, in this family, we are not afraid of the law. I wonder if he can hear the uncertainty in my voice. Is today the day he learns that Uncle is willing to lie to him? That I'm more human than I am hero. We both know the truth is far more complex than do not hide. Both know too many black boys who disappeared, names lost. Know too many Trayvon Martins, Oscar Grants, and Abner Louimas. Know too many Sean Bells and Amadou Diallos. Know too well that we are the hard-boiled sons of Emmett Till. Still, we both know it's not about whether or not the shooter is racist. It's about how poor black boys are treated as problems well before we're treated as people. Black boys in this country cannot afford to play cops and robbers if we're always considered the latter. Don't have the luxuries of playing war if we're already in one. Where I'm from, seeing cop cars drive down the street feels a lot like low-flying planes in New York City. Where I'm from, routine traffic stops are more like minefields. Any wrong move could very well mean your life. And how do I look my nephew in his apple face and tell him to be strong when we both know black boys who are murdered every day simply for standing up for themselves? I take him by the hand. I say, be strong. I tell him, I say, be smart. Be kind and polite. Know your laws. Be aware of how quickly your hand moves to pocket for wallet or ID. Be more aware of how quickly an officer's hand moves to holster for gun. Be black. Be a boy. Have fun, because this world will force you to become a man far more quickly than you'll ever have to need to. He lets go of my hand, but Uncle, he asks, Uncle, what happens if the cop is really mean? And it scares me to know that he, like so many other black boys, is getting ready for a war I can't prepare him for.
That was Javon Johnson.
We're back on the Black Think Tank Radio Network with Dr. Misty. You're back live, Misty.
All right. Thank you so much. Do we have somebody in the queue? If you want to speak up or be heard or share a thought or a comment, just push the number one button on your phone and you'll be connected. I'm interested to hear what you have to say. I think that this is a very important topic, and I think that we need to get more people discussing about how we can save our black male youth. While we're waiting, one of the things that I was thinking about in the break is I wanted to have a moment of transparency. I have four sons ranging from the ages of 28 to 17, and of those four male children, only one has not fathered a child, and that's my 17-year-old. None of my children are married. All of their children are born out of wedlock. And so when I say to you that this is a very important topic, it's close to my heart because I'm living this reality. As much of an activist as I am, as passionate as I am about this topic, I wasn't able to save my own children from this epidemic of creating life, you know, just willy-nilly out here. So important that we start the conversation. And let me just say this. My kids, from a very young age, were raised in a home where I told them, baby, if you want to have sex, just let me know. I will get you condoms. I would rather you not, but if you are so inclined to do so, let me know. I'll buy you condoms. Let's talk about it. You don't have to be ashamed. You are worth your future being protected. You are worth not making babies before you can take care of them. You are worth your future, and until you take care of you, don't make a life. And although my children heard that daily, they still went out
and made babies. So that says what? That says that just getting that message from me, their mother, wasn't enough. And it just reinforces what I was saying before, that we have to be intentional about engaging other men, rallying around our men, our male children, to create self-worth. The thing that attracts our youth to Islam, which I didn't fully go into this detail earlier, is that Islam in prison gives them identity, gives them accountability. It gives them value. It gives them worth. We have to give that to them outside of prison walls. We have to equip them with that when they are young, or they won't seek it from gangs, which, again, give them the same thing, identity, worth, camaraderie, validity, masculinity. We have to give it to them before they get to those places. So is there anybody in the queue, brother?
No, sis, not at this time.
Okay. Did you want to comment on that part?
Yes, I'll comment. There really is a correlation to all of that you just said. My own son converted at the age of 19 to being a Muslim. And, you know, we sat down, we had a conversation about it, and, you know, I just told him, I said, if you're going to do this, you know, make sure you are not approaching it as a trendy thing. Be serious about it. You know, it's more than just, you know, not eating pork. you know, he's taking it serious, and he's still, you know, he's still being about it. And as you said, I think a big part of why men convert is because of the camaraderie and the different role models that they have. We can go back as far as, you know, El Hajj Malik El-Shabazz, Malcolm X. We can go back that far. You know, a lot of people don't know, you know, even if they've seen the movie, they don't realize, you know, this guy was a pimp at one point in life. You know, he was running around with white women, you know. you know, but that's why I always tell people, you never know who our young people are going to grow into. And how many young people have we had ripped away from us? You know, ask yourself that question. It could have been the next Malcolm X, the next Dr. King. We don't know. And we'll never know. But my thing is, that's why it's so important that we need to, you know, get our young men out of this vicious circle that they're in. You know, me and my brother, we talked earlier, the one who took the children to band camp, Anthony Morrell is his name. He runs a youth outreach called X2REP, Time to Represent. That's the youth outreach that he runs. I'm definitely going to have him call up on one of the shows, or I'm going to have him on one of my shows. But yes, we definitely talked about our young men and how, if we continue to let these streets raise our children, and that's young men and young ladies, you know, we're going to be a faded picture. We're going to be fading into the background, because, you know, once the young people realize, not the young people, but the older people realize that when you put a young man out in the streets and you let the streets raise him, the next thing you know is that you got a young gunner on your hands who doesn't give a damn about anything or anybody. And that's when you got to start watching your back, you know, because that's when you know that you've created a monster, basically. And that's all the streets are good for, is creating monsters. You know, if you don't have any guidance in your life, and you're thrown out there like an animal, even though you're not an animal, you're going to become an animal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all the streets are good for. And we have to realize that's what we're here for, is we're supposed to be those that are the guiders. We're supposed to be those that are in guidance. I've actually talked young men out of robbing a fast food restaurant before.
Mm.
Because I was in line at that fast food restaurant, and I overheard them talking about robbing the place. And I turned around and talked them out of doing that. So my thing is that our young people definitely need to hear from us.
Yes. They need to hear from us, and they need to see us. Because
right.
The other
they need to see us walking
does.
Like we talking also. That's also
yes.
important. They need to see us walking
is,
like we talking. That's a
that
big
is,
part
that
of
that
being a role
system.
Model.
Yep. Because,
I'm
you know, it's like those streets teach that what they do is they disconnect our youth's compassion and empathy. And they harden them to be able to kill each other. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to tap into their compassion, and we're trying to tap into, once you awaken them to who they really are, then all of those other things, value of life, value of self-preservation, which is really what we're talking about tonight, all of that will click in our youth. Because they aren't beyond, I mean, they're still worth saving, and they're still savable. They're still savable. And that's why, you know, you stepping in and challenging those young men to not do something that could literally end their lives, either in death or prison. That one single encounter set those young men's paths, hopefully, you know, or those men's life, young men's life, on a different path. So.
That's right, sis, because my main argument was for them was, you know, so what are you going to do after that? You know, and I told
mm-hmm.
them to look behind the counter to see who was working. It was all Hispanic people working. And I challenged mm-hmm. them to apply for a job there at the place.
Yeah. Mm.
You know, because I was like, you know, where are our faces at in here?
Right.
Why, you know, I was asking them questions. We were having a conversation, and my thing is that we have so many guys that are my age that look down on the youth, unfortunately, and they won't even talk to them. You know,
mm-hmm.
they won't even game them up the right way. You know, give them options. You know, because at a certain point, they feel like they have no options. And you can look at the culture of music that they listen to, and you can tell that, you know, it's death culture. That's what I call
mm-hmm.
it, death culture. And if you get caught up in it, and all you talking about is mollies and beating women and drinking and, you know, what you can get and who you going to mess over this week, you know, it's death culture.
Mm-hmm.
And my thing is, you know, that's what's wrong with the industry. And that's the part that I was saying that Diddy didn't talk about. He's one of the people that sold the culture out, that sold the culture to the white entities, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But he still made some good points as far as, you know, we're putting out all this money and we're bringing in all this money. But if you look around, there's still no black, you know, record executives. Just like there's no black NFL owners. So I'm like,
right.
The music industry is just as bad as the NFL.
Yep.
You know, and so it's, you know, you got to look at the big picture of things. And you have a caller 2571. I'm going to open your mic because you're in the queue, and I don't want to take up all the time, so I'm going to let you speak. Introduce yourself.
Hi. My name is Shakara, and I was listening to
evening,
what everyone
sister.
Was saying. Good evening. And I, I do agree with, as far as the role model with the young black men and also the young black women, with my generation, and because I'm in my 20s, I do notice a lot of African-American young men, they try to fit in with the others. And because of the, you know, things are just so corrupt and they listen to the music or the way they sag their pants and, you know, the way that their grammar and the slang, they do it because they see everyone else do it. And then I feel like whenever, like, especially with women, when I try to be a more positive role model, they look at us in a way that we're trying to judge them. So they also need it from the elders, but I feel like they need it more from the younger generation, their generation as well, so that way they're not feeling left out. Like, you know, there are other, you know, younger generation of men and women, African-American, that are trying to make a change and a difference as well, so they don't feel like an outcast or that they're doing something wrong. And to them now, like, just with the population, is so many of us black women and men that are, you know, thinking this is fun, this is a trend, like what Missy was speaking on as far as having babies and having unprotected sex, and it's like they're proud of it, and they think that this is normal, and this is what they want. But then I feel like what they get more with everyone, the elders in the generation, they won't look at this, okay, well, the only reason why the elders feel it's more important is because they've been there, done that, paved the way. But then they can look at us and be like, okay, well, she's doing this now, then I can do it. And then, you know, we can continue a better cycle, start a better cycle than what we have now. So.
Well, thank you for that input, Shakar. I think that I agree totally with what you're saying. I think that the message needs to come from the top down and the bottom up.
Mm-hmm.
I think that part of the obstacle is there aren't enough young people in their 20s in your age group and below that are awake to be able to counter in a compassionate way. That's not a us versus them attitude, because right now, you know, we got woke versus not woke. And, you know, there's always these ways to be divisive versus turning around and lending somebody a hand or showing them a different way, a different perspective, in a way that's loving and compassionate and that says, hey, man, I see you. I see your worth. And, you know, I just want to share something with you. One of the ways that I do it with our young women is I make a promise every day to start my day out with complimenting no less than 10 women of color. Random. So if I'm passing them in a business setting or if I'm passing them on the street or whatever, I'll say to them, hey, I like your hair. I love your earrings. That color looks great on you. Your hair is fabulous. Because in my mind, I don't know how many times a day that maybe they haven't heard it. But I want them to know that I see you, you're valuable, and you are beautiful. And so that's my small goal to build up, you know, women of color. We need our brothers to come out here and step up, kind of like, you know, Brother Ozzy did with the young man that he intercepted that robbery with. To just say, hey, young man, I see your worth. I see more. I see your potential. And to do it in a loving way. And I think that it's really beneficial when we have young people in your age group that are saying that I want to reach back. I want to be that voice. I want to connect. You know, I want other black youth to see that there are alternatives to, you know, a lifestyle of death.
I agree.
So I appreciate your feedback. I'm sorry,
huh? Oh, no, you're okay. I agree. I wanted to mention with what you said, just based on my experience. It was just a few months ago when I was at the grocery store, and it was this young black man. He was about in his early 20s, and he was trying to sell music. like just DVDs and or just CDs. And I was thinking to myself, like, you know, there's going to be some hardcore rap, hip hop, you know, mm-hmm. like the profanity. And I was, you know, really didn't want to buy it. But I saw, you know, he was trying to make a profit and just get his hustle on. So I was like, okay, I'll buy it. I paid about $4 for it. And I start listening to it. And he just had, like, so much potential. The music was so nice with so much just passion with just his life, his background, where he's been. And then after I listened to it, I mean, he was just so educated. But you couldn't really tell from looking at him from the outside. And that's why I say you never judge a book by its cover. Mm-hmm. Because you would think that he was, you know, out here, which he did have that lifestyle. But he also had that good part of him, too. And then he started speaking to me about how he was, you know, molested as a child by male and his, you know, men in his family. And, you know, he doesn't have really much family left. And, you know, I gave him that positive, just as much positive feedback as I could, you know, just to tell him, you know, everything will be okay and, you know, just keep having a strong mind and whatever makes you happy that you have a drive for, just do it. And he just kind of gave me that look like he appreciated that coming from me, you know, because we were on the same age. And it's like, man, like he hasn't heard that in a long time. And it kind of, you know, he was like teary-eyed. And I was like, you know, this is what they need. This is what we all need is a little bit more of that. And so, you know, it made me feel good because, you know, he could have did something else. He could have been on a whole different path of just different profanity music, but it was really nice. And I realized that if it was just more kindness spread it, you know, then things would be a little bit better.
That is, you know, Shakara, you touched base on a lot of different things. That young man, just the fact that he has enough just desire and willpower to overcome those traumas that he has experienced, that for some people they destroy them and they can never bounce back. But here this young man is, he's got a dream, he's still out there, it hasn't destroyed him, and he's still pushing forward. And you, by stopping and actually seeing and acknowledging him and feeding into his dream, that propelled him. And see, that's that level of resilience I was talking about that is innate in our race. Things that were meant to destroy, they didn't stop him. And the fact that you came along, not even knowing the magnitude of seeing him, acknowledging him, listening to him, allowing him to share his story with you, what that did or what that will do for his life. And that's what we're talking about tonight. Each one of us stopping and feeding into the other person's life, that message of worth, that message that your life can be so much better, that you have potential and purpose. That's the overall message of tonight, mm-hmm. is our youth have potential and purpose, and they're our future.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm eternally grateful and thankful to you for your sharing your input tonight. And
you're welcome.
Brother Ozzy, I just am so thankful for this opportunity that we get to engage, you know, with our community. And I am hopeful that more people, you know, step up and participate and get on this train that's moving, because this is a train that's going to enact change.
Mhm.
It's just, you know, we're gonna do it. You know, when Malcolm X got incarcerated, I don't believe that he knew for one second that he was gonna become the activist that he did, and that he was going to impact even now after his death. That was still changing, based on what he, you know, gave us and the sacrifice that he made. And so, you know, I'm not calling on us to be martyrs at this point, but I am calling on us to be accountable to our youth. So
That's right. That's right, sis. Mm-hmm. I like what the sister said. You know, definitely you can't be out here judging books by their covers, because, you know, no matter what you say about today's youth, they are very intelligent, and mm-hmm. they are far more ahead of the game than we were when we were their age. And so that's one thing that we should always take into account. We don't have the luxury to not communicate with our young people. That's the one thing. And, you know, I always, you know, try to be on the same page with mine. It doesn't mean that you have to be their best friend, but it does mean that, you know, you have to know what's going on in their world and how they look at the world differently than you. Case in point, you know, we had a real long discussion with some young people about the death of the rapper XXXTentacion, and, you know, how it affected them, you know, and a lot of them were saying, even though I didn't get that, you know, they was comparing this guy to Tupac. You know, they were saying, well, he was the next Tupac. And I didn't get what they were saying until I actually went and listened to some of the lyrics in his songs. And even though he was, you know, to me, promoting death culture, the young man had a lot of deep things that he was saying. And my thing is that if we didn't listen to our young people and why they was mourning him, and, you know, even though there was definitely some negative stuff that went on in his life, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, he was dealing with death culture, and death came and got him at an early age. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of our young people are, you know, to the point where, you know, they don't care where they're going to be after 20, 21 years old, because they don't expect to live. And that's sad. That is really sad, you know, when you sit back and think about it. You know, that's why, you know, definitely our young minds, we have to put something on their young minds to let them know that, hey, you are the next branch in this family tree. You know, we really need you to take root, and we need you to grow, you know, and not be cut off at the root, which, like, so many of them are, you know. So I always say we got to get back to being the village and get away from this individualism that, you know, that we're in, you know, because to me, you know, the movement was partially bought off too, because after the 60s, you know, after those movements, you know, people coming back, you know, you getting your government job, and you know, you're able to move out of the ghetto, move out of the hood, and you feeling like you made it. So you stop fighting. You got comfortable. Mm-hmm. You stop fighting. And look where we are now, 50 years later, still in the same boat. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's, you know, if people take a look at that, that should tell them something. You know, we've made gains in certain places, but we have to remember this system is so diabolical that every time we learn how to play the game, they change the rules. And mechanisms that are still in place where, you know, we are still finding ourselves behind the eight ball at every turn. And I always, you know, like to use the racetrack mentality where black people are on a straight track while white people are on a circle track. And that circle track will keep them in the loop. And black people, we either keep running that straight line track, trying to reach the finish line, while, you know, you're on a circle track, you reach the finish line. We're either on that straight line track or we never get off the starting blocks. So that's just the way that this system operates. And, you know, we really have to get back to our young people, our young men and our young ladies. And right now, you know, people seem to take shots at the young ladies because, you know, they're out here, you know, getting a lot of the jobs and getting a lot of the, you know, think black women are the ones to graduate college right now.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely, Doctor, I hope that you do a show on our young black ladies. And I know you will. I know you'll
yes,
get to
yes.
them, but you want to start with our young men first and
yes.
see if we can find a way to bring our young ladies back to us. Because a lot of time what's created in our young men is pushing our young ladies away from them. And
yes.
We need to really open arms so that we can hug each other and, you know, work this thing out that goes on between us, you know, because I
mm-hmm.
see toxicity on both sides. And I know you've seen it too, Doc. And I don't tolerate it at all because
right.
I believe that, you know, if we can love one, then we can love all. With that, I'm going to yield, Doctor. And as usual, a great show, and I appreciate my sister Takara for calling up and participating, and definitely share the word.
You're welcome.
Because this show is fire. This is Friday Night Fire right here.
Thank you, Brother Ivy. You know I appreciate you and the support, and you know, like I said, this is very, very passionate about this, and. You know, advocacy is a part of my DNA, and we're going to continue this, and we're going to spread the word, and it's going to, you know, get bigger and better, and we're going to start nudging each other, and we're going to wake each other up. We're going to unplug
mm-hmm.
ourselves from the matrix.
Get out of this coma.
That's right, Takara. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Misty.
Oh, you're welcome, sweetie. I want to thank everybody that had an opportunity to listen tonight, and I look forward to chatting with you next Friday with
All
another
right.
moment with Misty. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right, sis. Let me know if you're ready to say your good nights.
Yep, I'm wrapping up right now, and I appreciate your support as always.
All right, sister, thank you. I just want to make a few announcements. Tomorrow night we have Shadow Talk with Sister Stephanie, and definitely we hope that she's okay. She told me that she was in the emergency room, so I hope everything's going okay with her. And just listen out for her show tomorrow at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And on Monday, we have Open for Hope Radio. They'll be hosting a show at 9 p.m. on Monday night. And my show will be here on Thursday, the Revolutionary Journal. And you're listening to the Black Think Tank Radio Network. And I'm going to play a quick promo, and then we'll be leaving the show with Walking the Block. So with that being said, good night, everyone, and thank you for listening always.
This is the Black Think Tank Radio Network. Call us at 646-564-9948. Press 1 to join the conversation, join the chat room, or listen via the show link. We appreciate your thoughts and participation. Each one teach one, each one respect one. Peace and enjoy the program.
Walk in the blood, yeah. I can see clearly. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord. another body drop. Somebody just got shot.
Another block, hot, crooked cop, gunshot, another body drop. Grandma waiting at the bus stop, county jail letter in the mailbox. House you sweat socks, Keisha braided heads on the porch. To get that extra guap, eviction face at rock bottom. Pray she bounce back on top. American dream, a nightmare, please make it stop. Neighbors watching, hell, modern day dress. Sky slinging rocks, black boy, white tank top. Baggy jeans, dreadlocks, streaming of that drop top. Non-stop, Chinese spot, and let me get a black and mild hawk. Navigate, liquor stores, project floors, and vacant lots. We be the have-nots. When we have, we become what we got. Another car ride by system not. That new shit, pedestrians jot. Hip hop corner, stay a track in the fly. The paint immaculate watch. Single mother's hustle to punch the time clock. Crime or cash crop. Somebody wanted the dime drops. Ice grills, mask a kind heart as time stops. Fathers are holograms. Sons waiting for the day to snub Uncle Sam. Why not? No sympathy for that man. He get what he deserved, damn. I said he get what he deserved, y'all. Look. And he get what he deserve, y'all. They keep telling me. Body found in the attic, contents of a purse scattered. Leftover re-shattered, clothes tattered, lipstick smear. Broken glass, no news reports on the matter. Nobody gathered, nothing changed, asked around about a name. Some said Tamika, some claimed Lorraine. The tag on the foot said Jane. I wonder who she was, did she give and receive love? Did she fight back or just gave up? She lay there, legs cold, hair gold. Framed in the child's pose, bruised nose. Seeming say pantyhose, Sade on the radio. Sorrow singer through the window. I wonder if pain has a tempo, I bet it's slow. Streets survive, never lived, then we die. Drink the bird glass, ceiling higher. Born on the wrong side, is there a right side? Classified, I labor sober, nickel and dime. And who decides? I lied by sign and order down the line. They see they gentrified, push us outside the city lines. Sirens frame the evening, profile for being non-white. Breathing, walking the streets, board cops, they fiending. Probable reason, no donut shops, the cheese and roll up. On a couple cats, Spanish speaking. Mexicans, but they screaming Puerto Ricans. They thinking they all the same, fuck them. Blow out their brains, killing season. It's war hour, wish they could take us all out. Let the dogs out, niggas should be hanging from trees. Auction off now, load them up, blast until they all down. Fire shots in full force now, they never see the courthouse, y'all. They never see the courthouse, y'all. They never see the courthouse, They never see the courthouse, They never see it, hey. And something keeps telling me. My brother say,
can you hear me?
Tell the world, y'all.
I can't see.
today on the block. Somebody just got shot today on the block. Look, y'all, watch today on the block. Today on the block. Another body dropped. Somebody just got shot today on the block. Look, y'all, watch today on the block. Another body drop. Somebody just got shot. Look, y'all, watch today. Another body drop. Somebody just got shot. Look, y'all, watch today on the block. Today on the block. Today on the block.